This episode of Nerd and Tie is brought to you by listeners like you. If you would like to support Nerd and Tie, just go to GoFundMe.com/NerdandTie. We probably couldn't make that easier, but we appreciate everything you guys have done for us.
On this live episode of Nerd and Tie from the Nerd and Tie Expo, we reflect on the passing of C. Martin Crocker. Tatiana Maslany has finally won an Emmy. Ghost in the Shell finally has some footage. Peter Capaldi is going to appear in an episode of Class. Fox orders Black Lightning to pilot. Star Trek Discovery has been delayed until May. And we read your emails and handwritten letters. All this in the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge on this live episode of Nerd and Tie.
Yeah. Well.
Well, hey, guys.
Look at the tens of thousands of you in our audience.
Don't look around.
Don't turn behind you.
There's 9,000.
Not actually you people here. I'm talking to the people listening to the recording who aren't going to know any better.
Because they're not here at the Nerd and Tie Expo live in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, where we are right now.
Yeah.
That is cool.
That is
It's
bizarre.
Been a year of building up to this, guys, and we are here at Nerd and Tie Expo, the very first one.
Mostly because it would be really weird if we didn't show up.
Yeah, that'd be...
That would have been awkward, right?
Granddaddy Sturz, he always said, always show up to your own expo.
We would have been the subject of one of our own articles if we didn't, like... Well, area podcast organizes expo doesn't show up. What a bunch of jerks!
And then I would have been really mad. I would have brought trade at court anyway.
I will say there. And you know, we may not be the biggest convention going on in the country this weekend, but I'll say we're definitely not the smallest because Patrick Delahanty of AnimeCons.com just tweeted at me a photo of the Wine Country Comic Con.
That's happening
and
this weekend.
That's happening. I can't show the audience because it's just on my phone, but...
That's on a Saturday afternoon?
That's on a Saturday afternoon. It is a single person in a vendor room. Oh. And I would feel bad most of the time, but considering what the antics last spring with Uriel Brenna...
Kinda,
it makes us feel better about ourselves.
Schadenfreude, making me feel glad that I'm not you.
All right, so that was a little mean, but we should introduce ourselves, probably.
As we should. I am, of course, one of your hosts, Professor Fursters. With me, as always, are the expo attending Nick Azumi.
Also known as Nickwid Vink, from this day forward.
And the organizer of all the great fanals that have happened here this weekend, Trey Dorn.
You want me to mock that word, but I'm willing to embrace it because...
Do it. That's what I'm hoping for.
Hashtag fanals.
I can't do it. You can get me to type it, but you can't get me to say
it. Taste it. Love it.
Because
embrace
I just
it.
Feel like someone trying to say the word flannel with a speech impediment. And...
I'm glad that got that response. Thank you.
Now you
Thank
all
you
feel
guys.
Bad, though, for saying it.
No. Fan okay, no word. But we've got a lot to talk about. From all that's been going on this weekend, too, we're managing to take time away to do our regular duty to inform our audience and attendees here about what's going on in the news. We've got a lot going on. Of course, our top story for this episode, long-time Adult Swim animator and Space Ghost Coast to Coast voice actor. Of course, famously the voice of Zorak on Space Ghost. C. Martin Crocker has passed away at the age of 54. Very, very sad, very early loss to the Adult Swim community and the animation community, I think, in general.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I don't know. I just remember the first time I watched an episode of Space Ghost Coast to Coast, I was traveling with my parents, and because we didn't have Cartoon Network
right
when I was a kid, and we were like traveling and turned on like a TV in some hotel, and I had actually watched reruns of the old like real Space Ghost cartoon as a kid, and so there was Space. It was the thing. Like if you've ever, it was the show, and I don't remember who the guest was in the episode I watched. But
is it possibly the Great Ramones moment?
all of that is unknown again because I like the way you're just watching your phone now.
I don't
like this is great entertainment for everybody.
Well, it's
the people in the room can't see that. The people at home can't hear it.
Like the whole coast to coast thing was so weird. Like that's not only the idea of Space Ghost having a talk show, but then C. Martin Crocker also said, "Hey, what if we made Zorak the band leader? Like, what if we did that?" And
well, you have to keep in mind that when Cartoon Network started, this is just one of those things that Ted Turner just kind of set up, and like there was really no budget. Cartoon Network was just, we're just going to rerun some cartoons. They had no original programming.
It was all Hanna-Barbera stuff, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they had access to the Hanna-Barbera vault, and that was about it. So then you have Martin Crocker and a couple other guys who were trying to make original programming for the network with the stuff they had lying around, getting paid basically in pocket lint. And Space Ghost was just the demented result of that. It was, you know, they couldn't make something completely new, but they had access to those character models. They had their own silly voices, and somehow Space Ghost Coast to Coast happened. And you can't downplay the importance of that show either, because that's the entire reason Adult Swim was a thing.
The
entire first Adult Swim lineup were Space Ghost spinoffs.
Yeah.
All of it.
And
even Aqua Teen.
It opened up the door for how absolutely ridiculous Space or the Adult Swim would get eventually. I mean, like you can't have shows like Super Jail or Rick and Morty or
it was experimental.
Yeah, like you can't have any of those without like this stupid idea of what if we took this old like animated Team Venture, right? You wouldn't have the Venture Brothers without Space Ghost.
Ironically, no one would be making money off these shows now if it weren't for the fact that C. Martin Crocker and associates were willing to not make money to produce just these random pilots for this network that no one was watching anyway.
Well, like I said, like I lived in a major market. I lived in Milwaukee, and we didn't have the channel. It just wasn't available, and you know, so it's. Like, the fact that, literally, what would happen, actually, the funny thing is that anytime we would travel, my family would travel, and we'd end up in, like, a motel or a hotel, I would literally, like, search to find out if they had Cartoon Network and if Space Ghost was airing anytime soon.
I had cable growing up, and the best days of my life were when Cartoon Network was offered as a free trial on Marcus Cable days. It was awesome. It was great. And I would stay home from school and watch Cartoon Network all day. Which was perfect.
That sounds irresponsible.
That explains a lot. But I mean, there have been so many. I mean, not only with how influential Space Ghost was on Cartoon Network and how C. Martin Crocker was influential on shows even like Aqua Teen Hunger Force, where he even did some voices on that show.
Well, he did Dr. Weird and Steve at the beginning, some and, intros for that whole first season.
And just how. I mean, like, how much of an impact Space Ghost Coast to Coast had on me and my comedy stylings. I know, Nick,
I had that really... For the longest time, when people asked me where my sense of humor came from, the two things that always came to mind were Garrison Keillor, Prairie Home Companion, and Freakazoid. Yeah, I kind of have the unholy love child of those two things. But then I paused to realize where my love of anti-humor, of long, awkward pauses, and just humor that's just so twisted that you can't help but laugh at it. That started with Space Ghost. I would stay up I remember Friday nights waiting with bated breath for the new episode of Space Ghost. Woo! So getting ready for to see what kind of weird humor you would get. And I think, well, really, for both of us, for our work on Otaku Tonight, I think the Space Ghost influence... It's very clear
it's
in
there.
Our old work.
If you watch episodes.
It's painfully apparent sometimes.
I mean, before we move on, guys, I mean, was favorite Space Ghost moment? I mean, that's... What
the entire episode, King Dead. That and Fire Ant.
Is it online?
No, it's not.
It's not online. Well, see, I read something that they're going to be making the entire catalog online available.
Well, it's all the episodes they could get. Yeah. There are some episodes they don't. They've got some issues with, so that's why it's they made all the ones that they could legally release available.
Mine is the episode where Beck was the guest, and that is an important episode to me because that colored my perspective of what makes a cool guest because Beck just went along with whatever crazy scheme they came up with, and it just kept escalating. And I will freely admit that there were some times, going back to Otaku Tonight, where there are some guests who I call Space Ghost guests, because they would be willing to go along with whatever dumb thing I came up with.
Martin and Doug, very much. And of course, remember pitching that thing to Tiffany Grant that
I remember,
she totally agreed to do?
I remember pitching my video to Tiffany Grant and her going along with every insane idea we came up with, and sometimes escalating the insanity. That I call that a Space Ghost guest, because that means that they're willing to go with something weird and make it weirder and better. Like
my favorite moment is the Conan O'Brien interview where Space Ghost keeps interrupting him to fight an ant. And I love the whole, like, just the line of him, like, killing the ant and him, like, wait, it's come back from the dead for vengeance.
Yeah, fire ant.
And
fire
Conan ant. Yeah. Conan just stopping and going, what? And I still find myself saying, I'm going to follow that ant back to its home. I'm going to kill its whole family.
You are a terrible person and a bad interviewer.
Oh, dear.
So unfortunately, C. Martin Crocker has passed away at the age of 54, but it's safe to say his influence in animation and comedy will not disappear anytime soon.
Rest in peace, Zorak.
Yeah, moving on to a slightly happier story, and I don't really have a good segue for this one because, you know, this is what happens every time we ever have to talk about someone having passed at the beginning of an episode, is how do you segue out of that story into something else?
Yeah,
anyways, to completely go in another direction, obviously last weekend was the Emmys.
I was busy watching football, but
the universe has decided that I no longer get to complain about something that I've been complaining about for years, because Orphan Black star Tatiana Maslany has finally actually won an Emmy.
Right?
After the first 2 years of not even getting nominated, last year she lost out to Viola Davis, and I'm not going to say Viola Davis didn't deserve it at all. I mean, she's a fantastic actress, but the fact that Tatiana Maslany plays 10 characters, 7 of which who are primary characters on the show, and does it all seamlessly, often having to act against scenes against herself, I don't think there are that many people in television working harder than that.
Well, you can't work harder than that. I mean, you're being told to create.
You could. You could also be forced to then do the lighting.
Right. And, but I mean, as an actor, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, I've done shows, stage shows where I played a couple of characters, but to have to play 7, ten characters
with distinctly
personalities.
With distinctly different personalities, with subtleties that even when you can tell that she's being one character pretending to be one of the other characters, you can see through, like, the layers of, like, performance that, like, you just don't...
See, that's night... That's nightmarish. That's amazing. Like I was... I would never try to put myself even close to the same level as her, but the close... But trying to imagine from that perspective, I was overwhelmed one time when I was in a production of The Christmas Carol, and I had to go from cute young Scrooge in one screen to angry, mean young Scrooge in, like, half a costume change. Like, that was overwhelming for me. Imagining doing an entire show where you're constantly switching these characters about, and you're keeping track of them, and being all of them.
I think it's also that you have to think that, you know, they have to shoot all the scenes for one character with one set of hair and makeup, and then redo the scenes the other half.
Yeah,
while still remembering how you were in the moment in the earlier scene, sometimes against no one.
I feel so bad that I haven't actually given the show time, and it's entirely
Nick
my fault
needs to watch Orphan
yet,
Black,
but. Like, every time it's described to me, it almost, from a production end, it makes my brain hurt. In a good way.
I think the funniest thing about this Tatiana Maslany's win is that she appeared to be surprised herself that she won. And had to fumble with her phone to get her acceptance speech out. Yeah, I don't have a lot of other commentary, but just holy crap, that happened, and now I need to find some other mild, minor, unimportant injustice in the world to complain about on a weekly basis.
The Oscars. I've got an injustice, and I'm not sure if it's minor for you. I mean,
Look around, Trey.
I want one that's unimportant, so I don't stress out about it.
And
so, no part of me was actually like emotionally concerned about whether or not a particular performer has an award. That would be weird if I was. You're not feeling that way, Fur, are you?
About
it's gonna be okay.
About
it'll be all right.
An award, did you guys?
Fur.
It's gonna be
okay.
It's not your fault.
It's gonna be okay, Fur.
It's not your fault.
It's gonna be okay.
It's not your fault.
Hold on. I know, guys. I just.
It's not your fault.
It's the wrong clone you were talking to.
Hey, it's tough being a clone.
It's
just take it from me.
I just try really hard every day to do the best I can, and sometimes it's not enough. And
it's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
I don't know what's happening.
How can you do this to me, Trey?
Okay, I feel like you've taken the joke to a level that wasn't necessary.
No, it's good. We're good.
It's necessary? Okay.
Do I continue with this, or do I don't know. I'm so scared.
Bringing it to a screeching halt like I always do.
Oh, dear Jeebus.
We have, okay. You know, I swear we're usually more organized and professional than this.
No, we're not.
No, normally I can edit it.
Why do this room of people? All right, well, if we're talking about...
I'm just lying to that side of the room.
The side that drank the invisibility potion.
So, I guess if we're going to talk about Hollywood and things of injustice, minor or not, I'm going to...
Oh, no, you mean there's something I can get mad about now?
Yeah, I feel that this is worth getting mad about, and it's too late to fix, and I've had a lot of people arguing with me that it's pointless to get mad about this, but I'm still kind of cheesed off. So we finally got the first teaser trailers of a big salvo of five, like, 15-second teaser trailers for the live-action Ghost in the Shell movie, which, as you may recall, is starring Scarlett Johansson and a cast of largely entirely other Asian actors, but we can't have the lead actor be played by an Asian actor, God forbid. I'm really angry about this, okay?
It's like the fact that
this, there's no way to argue, and I've had, I'm sick of hearing, and I get this all the time, of, oh, well, the major's an android, her body could be any race, or it's like, no,
right, but it's
this
again,
is erasure. The character's name is Motoko Kusanagi.
The important thing then, and because especially since, actually, I would say it would be less offensive if they were making her a Western character, but then it's actually implying the idealization of whiteness through the character making a choice to appear then as Caucasian.
Yeah, that's kind of...
I don't know.
And admittedly, maybe the casting sheets... every promo just keeps calling her the major, as if even the studio is afraid of actually stepping over this line or what not to do, and hearing the inside things of the makeup crew wanting to try to make her look more Asian, which is super uncomfortable and really racist. Why is this such a hard concept for people to wrap their heads around? And by the way, no, I'm preemptively getting into this fight with people. For everyone who's like, oh, there's nothing distinctly Japanese about Ghost in the Shell. You're wrong! It's extremely Japanese. The philosophy of it is Japanese. The politics of it are Japanese. The writer and the director of the original film were Japanese. Don't tell me there's nothing Japanese about it. Don't tell me that, oh, well, Japanese people on the street said that they're fine with it. No, that's not the same. When someone says to you, well, it's an American movie, I expected a white actress, that's not a shining endorsement. That's just saying they're used to it at this point. That's still erasure. That's still whitewashing.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sorry. This is... I feel like I'm going insane right
I've
now.
I've never seen Nick get this excited about anything. I'm a little scared.
Yeah, it's...
You didn't see me post-Valve rate, did you?
I'm a little terrified.
No,
that came out of Nick.
I've been on this
you
fight
turned on his mic at one point.
I did. He was peaking. I had to turn his mic down a little bit.
I've been on this fight online for months, and it's driving me insane. This is a very Japanese property. To say that there's nothing Japanese about it is ignoring several big issues, and it's ignoring other things like, yes, representation frickin' matters. Yeah, you know what? Having a female lead in an action movie is pretty rare. Having Scarlett Johansson as a female lead in an action movie isn't rare at all anymore, by the way. Just want to throw that out there. And Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, she's a very good actress.
She's a phenomenal actress.
But Hollywood likes to fixate on just one, you know, meanwhile we can get like seven Chrises.
Yeah, exactly. Furthermore, you know, for a lot of Asian little girls growing up, maybe they might want a role model who looks like them. There's a crazy idea. Representation matters. It hits hard. It's important. I can't believe it's 2016 and we're still having this conversation. And one last thought, one last insane bit of feedback I've gotten from people that absolutely needs to stop. Whenever anyone tells me, well, think of it, it's like it's this future thing, it's like a post-racial society. I am sick of post-racial society.
We don't live in a post-racial society, though.
One, it's never.
And we're the ones making the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're the ones making the movie. One. Two, I'm sick of sci-fi fanatics using post-racial society as a shorthand for saying white people doing other cultures things. Because that's what post-racial society means in any science fiction film discussion I've ever gotten into, bar none.
Well.
Mic drop.
I don't really have anything to add.
I can't add to that.
I can't.
I've been gearing up for this all night. I'm sorry.
That's right. Nick worked the night shift last night, so he had a good 6-7 hours to just sit there and stew with his thoughts on this whole thing.
I've been stewing with it for actually even several days, because after I posted the trailer, when I posted the trailers to the website, I was getting things from people like, someone who's using Tumblr logic is trying to ruin our Ghost in the Shell movie, and I just was about ready to. I was stressed enough getting ready for the con. I was about ready to kill someone for most of the day. It was not good.
Now that being said, I'm not sure if I'm going to see the movie, but the footage we got was intriguing enough.
The footage we got was just a bunch of clips taken out of context.
Put those clips taken out of context. Throw in a couple of clips from The Matrix, and we have the American version. Of yeah. Ghost in the Shell. There, we're done. We don't need to watch it.
I guess visually, like, yeah, it had the Matrix green filter over it. I guess it looked like live-action Oshii.
Well, I mean, yeah, because, I mean, the entire visual palette of The Matrix is lifted from the Ghost in the Shell film.
Yeah.
But let's talk about other things then.
Yeah, I think Nick pretty much nailed that one on the head. Something that despite...
Firmly into the floor.
Again, I don't have a segue into that.
I'm so sorry. I killed.
We're usually a fun show to listen to.
Speaking of things that we all get passionately angry about on this show, Stephen Moffat announced that he's going to be writing. It was announced back in January that a spinoff of Doctor Who was going to be happening, and we didn't really know anything right away other than it was going to be called The Class.
Well, we knew it was called Class. We knew it was taking place at Coal Hill School.
Which has been featured repeatedly
starting
in the show
from the beginning
since
of the show, as Susan was a student there.
All we really knew about the show is that it would focus on students, some faculty, and they all have secrets, and they all are dealing with secrets, and it was going to be a very secretive show. Well... We now have not only a release date, but we have some episode titles, as well as a special guest star that's going to be on the first episode on October 22nd this year on BBC.
The lead character from Blake 7, finally.
the episode for Tonight We Might Die will be airing, and on that episode, we will be seeing the Doctor, as played by Peter Capaldi, make a guest appearance on the show to really... tie that into the universe. Yay.
Yeah, I'm excited about Class. I think it's going to be interesting. The showrunner who's doing it is, I forget his name, but he's a young adult author and hasn't really done a show like this before.
Yeah, this is like his first TV gig, isn't it?
Yeah, but what we know is that they've talked a lot about how they're trying to pull, actually from one of my favorite shows of like when I was in high school, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and that's really where they're trying to get their tonal feel for the show. When you consider that, like, I mean, for people who've watched Doctor Who for a long time, and actually we saw it a lot in the last couple of seasons with because Clara was teaching there, that we've seen a lot of the stuff that happens around the school. But because the Doctor spent so much time in proximity, weird things happen more often, and that sounds a lot like a Hellmouth to me. So it's clear that they've been very overt about their inspiration for this show, and so it's
Well, that's cool though. Like that'll be fun, and having the Doctor there from the beginning, you have a solid connection to the rest of the universe, but then you don't have to necessarily.
Right, because it's not a show about him; it's a show about the world around. And we haven't had a Doctor Who spinoff for like Torchwood. We haven't really seen anything past.
Yeah,
Miracle Day.
Yeah,
Miracle Day. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think we can.
Okay. Yeah, I would 75% of it was very good.
Okay.
And there was 25% scenes thrown in because they could, because they were on Stars. Mm. And they just, they just didn't fit the pacing. But we're not critiquing Torchwood, but, like, because we had that, and then, obviously, Sarah Jane Adventures, which ended due to the death of Elizabeth Sladen, which is sad, but, like, this is the first spinoff with the end of Torchwood and with, you know, obviously Sarah Jane Adventures unable to continue. This is really the first, you know, return to trying to build more into the universe. And so I'm really interested to see where this goes and how's, you know.
It'll be interesting to see how they do this, too, because the showrunner for this is going to be distinctly different than the people running Doctor Who. Because,
yeah.
I mean, for every spinoff... for Torchwood, Russell T. Davies had a huge hand in
Russell
it.
Russell T. Davies
Sarah Jane Chronicles.
He showran both Torchwood and Sarah Jane Adventures. And he was showrunning Sarah Jane Adventures into Moffat's run. So it's... And obviously, I mean, Moffat's not, you know, the one in charge of this new show. And we've got a new showrunner taking over Doctor Who after this next season.
So it wouldn't make sense for him to showrun this new
Right. Movie. But it means that the show, even if, you know... The show will, no matter what, probably have a distinctly different sensibility than the current Doctor Who, and if they do it right, though, it'll still feel coherent in the universe. I mean, we're judging a show we've never seen, so this is all guessing.
As we are oft want to
do. This could end up being terrible, but it could be Degrassi.
I think it's
going to
be... can we get Drake in there, too? A Drake special appearance by Drake?
Only young Drake.
I'm not used to this. I'm from the Six.
It'll be
that's
nice.
Too clever and hip a reference
that's
to the rest of the
Drake
room,
impression,
including me, because I'm assuming it was
running
a Drake
through
quote.
The Six with the Doctor.
So, anyways, now that I've turned Fur's mic off,
turn it back on. Turn the machines back on.
All right. Yeah. No. I think there's a lot of potential here, and I think it's potential to explore some stories that they haven't, that you can't really do with the Doctor present, while still using the aliens and the fabric of the Doctor Who, you know, universe. I mean, it's just been over 50 years and, you know, 40 seasons of television.
And I love seeing the stories that deal with what people do when the Doctor's not there to save things. When it has to, like one of my favorite story arcs of any sci-fi show ever. Like the most heartbreaking, the most like disturbing. Like I actually
stop hitting the table.
I got sick watching it. Was Children of Earth, the series three of Torchwood, of how good and dark that was, and the whole premise was like, you know, this is why the Doctor doesn't come and save us all the time because we do stuff like this.
That Children of Earth, whenever I describe that miniseries to people, it's something that I'm endlessly glad I've seen, but I did not enjoy a second.
Oh, I can't watch it again.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to see it.
If I go back and rewatch Torchwood, I stop after season two. And that's heartbreaking enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm getting chills just thinking about Children of Earth. Like, my hair is, like, standing up. But, like...
Yeah.
But, like, it's
If there are people who have not seen it, we're not going to discuss the details because it's... we don't want to spoil anything.
It's very good.
But trust us when we say it is...
It's totally worth your time.
Super dark.
It's definitely the it's probably the darkest in canon Doctor Who thing. It's but it's worth your time.
Yeah,
it's worth your time once. You know it.
So, but it's such a fun thing to see how people react to well, fun. Not always, but like it's such an important thing to see how people. Regular humans step up to the plate and react to things going on in the world of Doctor Who without being able to say it's okay. The Doctor is going to be.
I don't know if I'd say it's important, but it's at least fun.
Yeah,
I would say well, entertaining. You know, from how many times the Doctor shows up in the middle of something weird or terrible happening, you have to know that in that universe, there's something like that happening all the time, literally everywhere. So
yeah,
yeah. No, it's a.
But we're humans, so we're more important.
Are we though? Well, you know. So,
speaking October 22nd, we get to see the premiere of Class, which is going to feature Peter Capaldi as the Doctor.
Yeah. Moving on, we are going to travel to the world of DC, but don't worry, it's DC Television, so nobody panic. Oh,
God. Wait, it's not Gotham, is it?
No, but it is on the Fox Network.
But Lucifer's good.
But it, yeah. Lucifer, although it's Vertigo.
Still.
But don't worry because this is news that does involve Greg Berlanti.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
So take a breath. Fox has ordered a new pilot for this next season. Again, this is just a pilot. It has not been ordered to series yet, but has ordered a pilot for a new series, Black Lightning, based off the DC Comics character.
Woo.
Yeah, it's now a lot of when the news broke about this is a lot of big, you know, a big hullabaloo was made about Greg Berlanti's involvement because obviously he's the successful, you know, he's been very successful with Arrow, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow didn't perform as well as his expectations is what his quote is. But and Supergirl and we named Supergirl tied for our best new show of last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's we're big fans of Supergirl.
And I have no love of The Flash.
But did you just say you have no love of The Flash?
I have absolutely no love of The Flash.
He hates The Flash.
You see, the people at home who are listening on their iPods and cars can't see that was a visual joke about his Flash T-shirt.
You know what? You guys
this is radio.
You guys did visual jokes all the time when I didn't have a camera and couldn't see what you were doing.
But that's why it was funnier.
But that's every time.
That's why it was funny.
I don't think he understood that the joke there was his confusion. But anyways, but while a bunch of news is made about Greg Berlanti's involvement, it should be pointed out this is actually not his show. He was brought on. He is co-executive producing this thing. But it's because he was brought on because the main minds behind it of Salim and Mara Brock-Akil are actually doing the main executive producing. Berlanti was brought on because they haven't made a superhero show before, and so they want him to, you know, come on to make sure that like it can be paced. Now, with Berlanti's involvement, the first question most people ask if they're massive nerds like the three of us up here is, will this be taking place in the Arrowverse? And then the other question people ask is, this is on Fox, might this end up taking place in the Gothamverse? And for the for the former, I'm going to say probably not. Oh, but for the latter, I say I really hope not. Because nothing should take place in the Gotham universe, especially Gotham.
There's no, oh, come on. No, absolutely not.
You're allowed to have a different opinion than us.
I don't know. Like
you're also allowed to be wrong.
The thing, as much as we dislike Gotham, I mean, I look at the acting on that show, and the acting is pretty good. I mean, that's like I really enjoy. I can never remember his name, but Cobblepot's actor.
You love him so much, you can't even remember who he is.
Yeah, Robin Lord Taylor. I think he's phenomenal as Cobblepot.
He's super well cast. Yeah,
I like the portrayal of Jerome, who's probably going to end up being coming back as the Joker in season 3. Doesn't make sense. But it is still good.
The casting is not the problem.
Yeah.
It was never the problem. There was never a moment.
The problem, I guess, is the premise. The if you wanna, yeah.
Yeah, no, the cast on that show is great. There is this issue called the writers who, including the showrunner who said superhero TV shows don't work. Which is a really weird thing to say as the person behind Gotham. I'm just saying, and also considering, you know, the massive number of successful superhero TV shows that DC has on television.
I'll say it one more time. There's a way I will forgive Gotham if, as the seasons go on, I just want Gotham City to get a little brighter, a little bit cleaner. We flash forward to the future. You see a man, maybe a little pudgy, putting on a blue cape, and you hear his voice, "All right, old chum. Time to protect our city." And it's Adam West's voice.
It's true. You know what I don't like about that Joker is he doesn't have a mustache painted over. I will not accept any Joker who is not Cesar Romero.
Cesar Romero Joker is best Joker.
Pre-killing joke Joker.
Before he had to get all dark and weird.
Good times.
But anyway, what we were talking about...
Because we didn't really talk...
Because Black Lightning. Now, Black Lightning is an important show because, I mean, he's one of the few African-American superheroes in DC's lineup. And the fact that we'd actually have, you know, a person of color headlining a, you know, one of their series is actually a really good thing. Because besides that, I mean, obviously there are... Legends of Tomorrow has a diverse cast that's an ensemble. Mm-hmm. But with the exception of Vixen on the CW Seeds Network, DC really doesn't have... a non-white lead in one of these shows. So the fact that, I mean, heck, you can't not get whiter than Liv on iZombie. so the fact that they're doing this, I think, is good.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good. Yay.
It's like literally the opposite of the Ghost in the Shell story.
Most of my familiarity with Black Lightning is from... not useful canonical material, so so I don't
there
have a lot
that
of
that great scene in Young Justice when in the cartoon when he says to Static Shock, "If you ever need a mentor, you should call me." That was his only line in the entire show, I think.
I think it's a good thing. I don't know enough about the character, but considering that, you know, it's got smart showrunners, and Berlanti, if they listen to him, will help keep it on track, mm-hmm. as you know, keeping a 20 episode season together. So yeah, I think this is all good.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, assuming that it gets picked up, because again, remember, this is a pilot. We talk about pilots multiple times a year, and only a small fraction of those actually end up getting picked up.
True.
Sometimes for the better, but this time we really hope that this happens. I hope this happens, and even if it doesn't happen, I want to see the pilot.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry, someone will have a bootleg of it somewhere, like that great Wonder Woman pilot, Pants to be Darkened.
Oh my God, I've watched that.
I have too.
It's so hard to watch.
That's the NBC
she's
one,
so
right?
good, and that's our one where the casting was not bad.
Yeah, that lead. My brain is blanking on her name, but she was so good on Agents. She was so good on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so watching that, it was just hard.
She went from
painful.
A really bad Wonder Woman to a really good Mockingbird.
Yeah,
and I was like, that's.
Yeah, I loved her as Bobby Morse, but oh my God, as Diana of Theramecia, it was.
That mascara, you mean?
Look, I've been reading it with pronounced a certain way in my head
but
for 36 years. I've been reading it a certain way in my head for 36 years.
Oh my God, wait, do we get to make fun of Trey for mispronouncing something?
For once,
let's revel in this, Nick. Hey, Trey, how did he pronounce that word? Can you say it for us again?
I pronounced it shut up for.
Because I don't think it was pronounced right, Trey.
Yeah.
Is this what it feels like to be Trey all the time?
I've never been on this end of that conversation, honestly.
It feels good. I like this. Let me revel.
Live it up while you can, boys.
Let me revel in this for just a moment here.
Man.
You know, usually I just get to make fun of Nick's emphasis on the wrong syllable. Okay, so yeah, Black Lightning.
All right, well, hey, speaking of shows that we're not sure when it's happening.
How was I supposed to know how it was pronounced? I've never heard it out loud. I have never heard it out loud in my life.
How do you know that Nick's right then?
I don't, but they seem very confident. And like all things in life, you know, if you sound very really, confident, you must be the right one. That's
really
how I get by most days.
The guy who wrote his final thesis on Golden Age comic books. On this one, do you really want to mess with it?
Well, I mean, in the context of this conversation, I don't. But if you tell me on the street, hey, do you want to mess with this guy who got his degree writing about Golden Age comic books? I'm actually probably game.
I'm going to poop in your butt. All right, so moving on. Speaking of TV shows that we're not sure when it's happening anymore. Oh. So, Star Trek Discovery is a show that we were very excited for. We're still very excited for, specifically for when it's all up so we can subscribe to CBS's service for a month and then binge watch it and then immediately unsubscribe. But, but the month that we're doing that in is changing pretty drastically.
I know.
Because we were the series was supposed to come out one episode at a time on CBS's
All Access.
All Access.
CBS All Access.
I'm so offended by it, I don't remember its name. Get on Hulu with everyone else, darn it. Anyway, CBS All Access was going to have this series up in January of 2017. And then we just got a little bit of an announcement that it has been delayed all the way to May of 2017.
Well, and it's a weird thing because they aren't behind schedule. Like,
yeah.
Now, I know I'm disappointed that the show's been delayed till May. I mean, obviously CBS borked up, you know, promoting anything with the 50th anniversary beyond all belief, and the fact that, I mean, Paramount screwed it up on their, you know, half too by, you know, putting out Star Trek Beyond in the middle of the most crowded summer ever instead of putting it out in the empty September when the 50th could have been used as a promotional material.
No,
but that's
one
Paramount's fault.
How anniversaries work in the Star Trek community, apparently.
But CBS on their half, like, besides not doing any really much promotion of the fact that the franchise coming out 50th, I've been a little worried about them. Now, this delay though doesn't come from the network. This delay actually comes from showrunner Brian Fuller. Fuller actually asked to have more time to develop some of his scripts for later in the season. And so he actually requested the delay from CBS.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is not a case of... And again, they've been very clear that...
There's nothing to be concerned about.
It's nothing to be concerned about. The show is on schedule. We'll start production in Toronto on its scheduled date. It is not really delayed at all. And actually, in many ways, this is a good thing because I would rather they take the time to get it right. And also, frankly, there are fewer things on in May and June, so I can subscribe to CBS All Access for, you know, a month and then watch all the episodes and then promptly cancel CBS All Access afterwards.
If Brian Fuller says, hey, guys, I would like a little bit more time to make something really good, I'm going to give the guy who made Pushing Daisies, Dead Like Me, Wonderfalls, and Hannibal all the time in the world that he wants if we're going to get a show like that.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, Nicholas Meyer is in the writer's room.
I know. I know I'm going to be having joy fits as soon as I see that Ugliest Sin ship fly across the screen.
I like the Ralph McQuarrie design.
I know you do, and you're welcome.
This is like the 34th episode in a row that we've had this discussion, guys. I'm just going to sit back and let them duke it out.
Let's not get sidetracked into classes of starships, because that was the episode where we got so nerdy that the internet in Janesville stopped working.
That's true.
I'm not kidding. I couldn't talk anymore. My internet was just like, nope, I'm just going to dump your books, give you a swirly, and no more talk. And what do you know? My cable provider showed up, dumped my books, and I was in the toilet. Next thing I knew.
It's mostly just because he likes the Miranda class so much.
We're not doing this again.
We're not doing this again.
All right. Well, with that, that covers our stories.
That covers the stories, so I think it's time we move on to the mailbag.
Into the bag of mail.
First, we actually had an email sent to us by somebody sitting in this very room.
You know, I want to point out that, I mean... Don't get me wrong. We appreciate the fan mail, but you're sitting right there, Langland. I can see you.
You're right there.
But Langland writes
to us, and he says, with the subject Nerd and Tie Expo. Langland writes, "Hey guys, so here we are at the Nerd and Tie." You know what, Langland? Come up here and read your letter. Come up here and read
here,
your letter.
You can stay right there because there, the mics are pointed at you right there.
Read it through my cracked phone.
All
right.
"Hey guys, so here we are at the Nerd and Tie Expo. I'm in a poetry class, so I'm going to have to read this kind of artistically. So it's finally here, and I hope I'm having fun, and I hope you guys are too." Yeah, I'm having fun.
Good. Good. Have more
if
fun.
If I don't, hopefully I'm wearing a tie, because if I don't, then I suck.
You're wearing a tie, so you don't suck.
Yep.
There you go.
But I want to point out the rest of you, this is not a requirement.
No,
we didn't make anybody
do
it. You guys are all fine for not wearing ties right now.
You're the best. You're the greatest.
"My birthday was on Tuesday the 20th, and I'm treating this as a birthday gift to me. This
happy birthday, Langland.
Happy birthday, Langland.
Thanks. Anyways, I've already been through a lot this month, you know, with school starting and getting into a car accident with a bear."
What?
I actually did know this, and I've read this letter before, but for some reason, every time I hear it, I just go, huh?
I'll show you the damages on my phone.
I've seen the photos on Facebook.
That I still can't figure out how I got, and this is in parentheses, that I still can't figure out how I walked, got out to with
only
two scratches
on my left finger.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
They're healed now.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not your doctor.
Yeah, and so with that said, I hope the convention is a success because I don't mind doing Langland versus Punch.
I'm sorry. We have to correct you. You didn't write, "I don't mind." You said, "I wouldn't mind." And, you know, if Fur made that kind of mistake on air, it's just not acceptable. It's not doing justice to our letter writers, Langland.
All right.
You need to read their words correctly, even if they're
so
your own.
Because I wouldn't mind doing Langland versus Punch-Out again. So please, do this again. And I want to enjoy this con every year. Langland. "Are you sure you are real?" Yes.
Oh, you don't have to read the CAPTCHA output.
Thank you, Langland. I'm glad you're having a good time.
our next two letters...
So, we encourage people to write us using the online form and email that we have set up. There are some listeners who insist on avoiding this system.
At every live
show. Anytime we do a live show. I'm looking at you, Archimize.
Who is
right now.
And almost always, every time again we do a live show, he hands us two slips of paper on which he has handwritten letters. Mm-hmm. Usually in cursive.
Because, you know.
And one was styled like one of the letters home from Ken Burns' Civil War, which was my personal favorite, honestly. But they're not all like that.
So, Nick, I think you've got the first one.
We should do it like Ken Burns' Civil War here.
"Dear nerds, ties, and live audience, I hope you're all having a great con. What has been your favorite event so far? How does it compare to Nerd and Tie Expo 2015? And lastly, what's your favorite memory of this hotel before they tear it down? Have a great day. Archimize."
Hmm. Oh, my favorite memory at this hotel. Gosh. There's a lot of them.
When you were Wilson Oaks Jr.?
That was a lot of fun.
For context, for those at home who might not be aware, that while this is the very first Nerd and Tie Expo, so his joke about 2015 is very clever, Brian. Very clever. This hotel was formerly the home of No Brand Con before they left town. So while this may be our first Nerd and Tie Expo here, the only Nerd and Tie Expo here due to the fact that, again, the hotel's going away. I've worked six cons in this hotel. Fur, you've worked several.
Yeah, a lot. Right about that, actually.
Yeah.
About six.
Well, no, because you weren't there at No Brand Con 5.
Yeah, so...
So 5.
5.
Yeah, 5. And Nick, you were at No Brand Con 5, weren't you?
No, four.
No Brand Con 4.
Yeah, I was at 4 onward. Or no, I was at 2006 onward. So I was at.
No, you weren't at 2005?
I wasn't at 2006.
You didn't go to the Brand Core year?
No.
Didn't you go to the Davies year once?
No, I missed 03 and 04. I was at 03. I missed 04 and 05.
Okay, so your first No Brand Con was at the Ramada?
No, my first No Brand Con was No Brand Con 2.
Okay, oh no, but okay,
I was there,
so
then I missed a few years.
As we go into personal detail history of convention things, but so we've all spent a lot of time in this building doing a lot of stuff.
I think we've all been here for. Have we been here for every year of this building? Because I think we all have. Yeah.
I mean, I think my favorite memory here would be
No Burn Con 2000.
Every like all the times that I was on staff, getting to work with. I mean, you know, you have a lot of con hotels that aren't necessarily like they're cooperative, but I mean, every time we've ever been at this venue has been the staff has been incredibly cooperative and open. To the needs of the convention and the convention goers, which is something that's very cool. So getting to work with the non-convention staff has always been pretty cool.
Yeah, my favorite memory here was that time with the guy with the knife.
Yeah, you weren't involved in that.
That's why maybe, I loved it.
That's maybe because you weren't the one talking him down while you had a knife.
I like the way you ran out there and then realized, what am I going to do here?
Yeah, I ran after the guy and was like, wait.
It was not an attendee.
I should let the cop that's running behind me with his taser out take care of this.
There's a guy with a knife.
I would say my favorite... I don't know if I have there's so many good things here, so I'm just going to say all the time I got to spend with people here, because this really is the event hall where a lot of my closest friendships were forged. And so between this getting torn down and Daishokan, the other con I co-founded's hotel getting torn down, I have a lot of memories that I don't have geographical locations to associate them with anymore, and that hurts.
Oh, no, this is like, so, you know, it's the first No Brand Con, the first three No Brand Cons we ran down at UW-Eau Claire Student Union. That student union doesn't exist anymore because they replaced it with a new building. Then this building's going, and then while the Lismore has reopened, it only reopened with, you know... just about, you know, two-thirds to a half of the convention space they used to have. So this really is a record, like a continuing pattern of any time I run a convention in a hotel, the hotel is not long, or the building, I should say, because Davies is not a hotel, that the building is not long for this world.
Sorry to whatever
and
hotel
I really,
we end up at next.
You
that's
I didn't say that every hotel that had ever been torn down, I ran a convention in Langland. There's a significant difference.
I guess we should preface this.
All squares are rectangles.
With the fact that when Archimedes gives us two letters, one of them isn't to us.
No.
It is to another listener named Shameless Otaku, who has regularly...
Regularly writes back on the
uses
show.
Us as a go-between to get messages to each other because
email hasn't been discovered. Like they haven't realized that you can directly email people since 1992.
All right,
but
let's wrap this up.
You ready?
Archimedes writes, "Dear Shameless, do you prefer the original version of Little Shop of Horrors in black and white, or the musical one with Rick Moranis?" I just saw them for the first time, and I found the newer one to be quite entertaining. If they remade it, who would your dream cast be? Have a good one, Shameless. Enjoy the finale of Macross Delta from Archimedes. Well, I don't know about you guys.
Well,
but
we can't answer that. It wasn't to us.
Yeah, no. It's, if you're Shameless Otaku and you have an answer to that question, please write directly to Archimedes.
Here, take my Kleenex. Wipe the lipstick away. Look at your face as clear as the morning. Okay, I'm done. Anyways.
And we alienated the audience again.
My dream cast would be a Sega.
All right. Well, you know, that takes us to the next part of our show before we open up the floor to audience comments, where we're going to quick get through the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge before we do that. So it's because we have plenty of time, guys, because, you know, this is the panel we threw in here before cosplay set up. So the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, for those who are unaware, is that every episode of the podcast, we try to do this where we read a line from a book, and the challenge to you, the audience, is to guess what book we are randomly reading lines from. Now, because we're doing a live show, we can't actually do the full challenge where I can't read a line from a book, because I don't know if you noticed, it would be kind of a spoiler if I picked up a book in front of a room with people in it.
I need to get you some book socks so you can just cover the cover, because like they make those.
But if you guess correctly, you get included in our Hall of Awesome. The benefits to the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, we read your name aloud every episode of the show. 2, we list your name on our website. 3, nothing else.
What more do you want from us?
It's a greedy bastards. Anyways, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamai, Zero, Ren and Senti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slitheridi, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilysaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, and the Minnesota Librarians, and one more person has now been added to the Hall of Awesome, and that is Sean Orange Course, who guessed accurately a few days ago the book Unfamiliar Fishes by Sarah Vowell that I've been reading random segments from for the last 9 months. I figure at this point he probably has a full chapter. I don't know. So, Sean, I'm going to... Since you did just walk into the room, do you have anything... Would you like to come up to the front of the room and...
Make your acceptance speech.
Well, I never was a very cool kid, so I'm glad now at the age of almost 36 I can finally be awesome.
Sure. Yay!
Might help if you didn't wear that hat. Are those sandals with socks?
Maybe.
It's not even remotely the first time I've seen him do that.
Lord.
So, at this point, now, Sean, your name will be added to the website later today. So, you know, I don't want to spoil it for the... actually, we'll probably put it up on Monday when this episode goes live, because I don't want to spoil the listeners that you got in.
We know there's at least probably one person that refreshes that Hall of Awesome.
Yes, clearly while they're listening, instead of on their phone while they're driving to work like most of you do who listen. I'm talking, of course, to the people listening, not the people in the room. Usually when I say you, when there's people in the room, I'm talking to the people in the room, but this time I'm not. Because although it's true, you could go back and listen to this a second time, but I promise you the news stories didn't change. Unless they did, and then we have bigger problems.
Slip through it.
So at this point, as we have now gotten through all of our prepared material, this is the point of any live show where we open up the floor to listener comments, responses, and questions.
I sent an email.
Did you?
Oh, God.
Oh, God, okay.
Tiffany sent an email.
To which address?
I filled out the form.
Oh, you filled out the form. Okay. Here we go. My phone's not getting my email for some reason right now. There's a lot of email in here. There we go. So I guess we have another letter. This email comes from Tiffany Grant.
Oh, God.
Subject, love you guys. Glad I got to come to the first Nexpo. Are you planning to steal anything from the hotel? Well, you know, we spend a lot of time throughout the weekend in the executive conference room, which we use as our staff control center. And there's, you know, I know that there's the big TV in there, but there's also this really big conference table.
I'm stealing the conference table.
And I don't so much want it so much as to want to see if I can get it out of the room physically.
Move it into the other executive room, which does not have anything else in it.
And just see what happens to the staff the next day when they try to figure out what the heck happened. Also, I'm thinking the chandelier.
I wouldn't mind grabbing some letters. Like there's that sign that says the Plaza Hotel and Suites out front by the desk. If I could get like the P from that, that'd be pretty cool.
I'm thinking, I mean, yeah, towels would be boring. I mean,
oh, guys, there's these little... I've been doing it all weekend. There's these little wooden, like, pointy things in the restaurant. Every time I go in there, I always grab one. They never even stop me. I'm good.
I actually legitimately know that the convention chair for a convention that's not ours, one of the visiting convention chairs, for one of the other cons promoting here, might have stolen some of the table clips because they're better than the table clips he has for hanging his banner.
Oh.
Why not?
Jiminy Mimini.
Shocking. Scandalous, even.
He did it right in front of me. After I told him I didn't really care. Just don't get me caught.
They'll add another 50 cents to the bill. Thank you for the question.
Yes, thank you for the kind letter, Tiffany Grant.
Noted voice actress and kleptomaniac.
Yeah, no, it's I had a joke, but then I lost it and because I couldn't make it funny. The punchline just didn't work. And now I'm going to explain how I had a joke that didn't work without ever telling you the joke.
If you have
because
anything to say,
I'm really, really, please, someone interrupt me.
All right, yeah. if you'd like to come up.
Tiffany.
Okay, I have a question because you guys were talking about the DC shows and so forth. Do you know about the announcement of who's going to be playing the president on Superman?
Yes, yeah. Linda Carter. Yeah, we discussed that when the... Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's Linda Carter, of course, will be playing the president in season 2 of Supergirl. And actually, they were trying to seed that and make that happen during season 1, which is why they were always using female pronouns for the president. Because Berlanti the whole time was like, I want Linda Carter to play the president. And so it's...
She's so great.
Oh,
always been
well,
so
Well, I remember watching reruns of the old Wonder Woman show, both versions, like the World War II version and the... And being very confused as a small child when the time period suddenly shifted because they reran them in the same time slot right after each other.
I really do find that World War II season to be just remarkably charming. Like, I love the transitions with the little comic book text bubbles. And then I'm also really biased, though, because Diana's, like, her regular secret identity is as a wave. And that was the branch of service my grandma was in. So I'm super biased toward the wave. So it's always fun. It's like, yay, Wonder Woman's a wave. Just like grandma.
All right. Do we have... Do any people who aren't being paid to be here have anything?
I'm here for...
I know. I'm teasing.
You made me come to this panel.
Actually, we very much appreciate you coming out. I will say it's a little weird to have a well-known voice actor sitting in the front row of a podcast you're doing, but I'm not complaining. Langland, say something.
Okay, can we still sponsor Nerd and Tie? You didn't say if we could. You just
absolutely. Oh, yeah. Nerdandtie.com/GoFundMe for the general fund, or you can go to the sponsorship information on our website if you want to directly sponsor an episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, that's and there's the stuff on the website to do that. Yes, absolutely.
Cool, you haven't been to 88 yet.
Aren't we?
Isn't this?
Pretty sure we're up to.
Let me check the See, I don't check the episode numbers until I upload. So let me take a look.
We aren't up to 88 yet.
And I know when
it's coming up.
Oh yeah, no, because this is episode 82. Okay, yeah. And, you know, let me tell you, when you do things fortnightly, it takes a while to get to episode 82. Yeah.
We aren't even in syndication yet, but boy, once that syndication check comes in.
Yes, because there's a really, you know, there's a massive market for reruns of current events programs about geek
Johnny Carson
culture.
Reruns happen on MeTV. It's okay.
No, I will tell you, listening to reruns of this show would be entertaining because, like, there are things like when we got excited about Gotham.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Or remember the Man of Steel trailer?
Oh, well, that was before that came out before the show.
Yeah, that came up before the show.
Oh, it did.
Came out before the
but
show.
Or yeah.
Can still be sad.
Yeah.
I'm sad every time someone says Man of Steel. Quite frankly, but that's.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we talked about Man of Steel on the show when it came out. We just did the trailer would be too early. We talked about Man of Steel because.
Because I was really sad.
because Jonathan Kent is an idiot.
And
so, okay, so let me talk about Man of Steel for just 2 seconds here. I know I've said this before, but okay, I live in Indiana in a flat area where we get a lot of tornado warnings. Smallville set in Kansas. Now, Jonathan Kent, the scene where he dies is the stupidest thing in the history of anything. First off, he goes and he sends Clark with all these people to an overpass. The first thing you do, you never, in case of a tornado, is go under an overpass. It becomes a wind tunnel. All of the debris gets directionally pushed in one way. It would be a slaughterhouse. Although this does feed into Nick's theory that Jonathan Kent is a serial killer.
Actually, Archimedes sent us that
theory. I don't credit him with anything. Anyways. Okay, I didn't expect anyone to feel that much sympathy for Archimedes. I'm sorry. But anyways, besides the fact that he's sending all these people to the worst place possible, he is 10 feet from the ditch.
Yeah.
He is 10 feet from the ditch. He literally could have made it.
Well,
all of those... He would have been fine. And it's just so ridiculous. Is anyone with, like, it is so unbelievable that someone who grew up as a farmer in Kansas wouldn't know how to handle himself in these conditions.
Can I take apart my two least favorite parts of that scene? Because they're a little bit different from yours, Trey.
Did they let the dog die?
No, they went to save the dog. That was done to save Crypto. One, you know, that's the first questionable decision. The other thing is that scene is just the microcosm of Zack Snyder doesn't understand the movie he's making. Because in Superman 77, the Christopher Reeve one, Jonathan Kent dies, but he dies of a heart attack, and they're not subtle about it. Clark literally says out loud, "They're all my powers and there was nothing I could do." That's the entire point of the scene. In Man of Steel, there are about a dozen Superman-y things he could have done even without getting people's attention. But because Man of Steel Superman is such a preposterous idiot, he doesn't do them.
Was that a reaction or do you have a question?
I was doing the Ken thing.
Yeah, exactly. Don't save me.
Let me die. Yeah, he did advocate a bus full of school children dying.
I don't know,
as much as that has me concerned about that interpretation of Superman, it has me much more concerned about letting Zack Snyder around a bus full of school children in general. Let's all think about that for a moment.
I'm thinking about John Snyder, Jonathan Kent, and how much I like him more. You know, I would even prefer it if he just went full-on Dukes of Hazzard as Jonathan Kent. It still would have been better than Man of Steel, Jonathan Kent. Clark, get the dog in the car! Yee-haw! Ain't no way those Kent boys are getting out of this one!
Although he did die of a heart attack on that show.
Yeah, that's true. See,
yeah.
That's because Smallville actually understood the point of that.
I don't know. The best Ma and Pa Kent ever are from... On screen, I should say, or from Adventures of Lois and Clark. And Martha Kent making Superman's costume with him is the most adorable scene ever. There are many things wrong with that show, but there is nothing wrong with Ma and Pa Kent in that show.
I agree, but I also want to give a special shout out to the DC animated universe, the Bruce Tim Paul Dini one, where you get Jonathan and Martha Kent saying to Martian Manhunter, "Come on in, son. We're no strangers to aliens around here."
Yeah, I think what it all goes back to, if you know, is as we talked, you know, the DC Carnival of Sadness is really all Zack Snyder's fault.
Yeah,
because obviously on television they don't seem to have a problem with doing it well, except on Gotham.
I have a comment on that.
All right, Paul, what's your comment?
I think the DC Carnival of Sadness still keeps continuing.
Yeah, we're right.
Justice League is still coming out.
It just keeps on going and going. I think it'll end when Justice League is done.
I can't say that because Suicide Squad is making buku tons of money.
Oh yeah, like Suicide Squad, which like is such a like. I feel like you could have made a good movie with that plot
easily,
and they just chose not to. No, I mean I see we're both. Like, both the studio interference and the original direction both have some really big flaws in it, but, like, with the lack of emotional weight with the villain, like, they didn't build up the villain enough early in the film, and then so it kept feeling like you were in the first 20 minutes of whatever movie you were watching, but the movie kept changing.
Can I just point out that the high point for villains in these movies for me is still Michael Shannon yelling, "I will find him!" as loud as he can, because that's been about as good as we're going to get with this.
He's a brilliant comedic actor.
Did I get the wrong guy for general?
No, you got the right guy.
Yeah, okay, Man of Steel.
Has range. He just didn't get to use any of it.
Am I the only person who thinks during the scene where General Zod is yelling, "I will find him," multiple times, that must have been him doing multiple takes? Like, he was just doing different, "I will find him. I will find him. I will find him." And Zack Snyder's like, "I like all of these. I'm just going to use them." Like,
all I know is that Zack Snyder really likes those things on the desk that you put on things and they get the imprint.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
He also likes Kryptonian spaceships just looking like big black dildos flying up into space.
If it works for dogs.
I want to point out, I have now seen Nick Izumi say the phrase "big black dildos" not 20 feet from Tiffany Grant. I thought I had seen everything in life, but I had never seen that.
We should have shot the making of Neonzilla versus Kawaii Kong. I'm, that's all I'm saying.
And I want to say, I'm also seeing the day where the word "big black dildos" came out of Nick's mouth prior to them coming out of Furs.
And I want to point out that no one at Warner Brothers looked at that scene and was like, "Wow, hey Zach, those look like big black dildos. Maybe we could change that in post." No one. Presumably a lot of people.
Well, I think if anything,
dollars, and not one of them.
No.
Kind of look
I think if anything, that Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman shows that no one at Warner Brothers was paying attention to what the hell Zack Snyder was doing at all. Man of Steel made money because it was a Superman movie that hadn't come around in a long time, and it wasn't a good. It was.
And there
I
was
actually
a major drop off after first weekend.
Here's the thing: I actually will say that Man of Steel, if I just looked at it as a film that was not about Superman, and wasn't trying to portray Jonathan Kent as a competent human being able to tie his shoes, if I just eliminate those, I can actually. It's a well paced movie. And it is a movie that keeps you entertained, unlike his follow-up, which, besides continuing to make Superman kind of not Superman,
a monumental idiot,
is so long. Batman vs. Superman is so long. And then they just said, you know what I need to do? You know, Batman vs. Superman, you know what? We need to fix it. Let's make it longer on disc. Like, we went and saw it at the drive-in. My wife fell asleep halfway through Batman vs. Superman. People were dying on screen, and she was sleeping.
I got a comment, too. I did something similar. I went to the drive-in, which is not far from where I live. It's actually about half an hour away, and I was freezing my ass. I'm like, is this movie going to fucking end? And I'm shouting in my car.
All right, so we've hit the explicit filter on iTunes now. No, what do you mean? We just have to hit the button that says explicit. Thanks, Paul. Yes, random.
I got my own story about Batman v Superman. I saw it in IMAX 3D for free because I work in a movie theater.
See, that's the only way to see it.
I had to resist the urge to either fall asleep or walk out of the movie because it was just so offensive to my eyes. And then after I went home, I walked for about an hour because it just left me feeling so frustrated.
I want to say there's hope. I do want to say there's hope because.
And our hope is Scott Logan.
Yes.
Wait, so, Nick saying, "Let it fake black dildo."
That, no.
No, that's not a swear. Although it might be the episode title.
You should be saying, "Can I keep it?" at this point.
You know, if it weren't for the fact that we'd get some really, really confused people coming off of Google, I would call this episode "Big Black Dildos." It just.
I just want to say, though,
we'd get more traffic if we had if we did on-screen ads. We would really kind of clean up with that.
To be fair, to close off the DC Carnival of Sadness, though, I feel like there's hope because Ben Affleck is a producer now. He's a comic reader, and I like to imagine Zack Snyder coming up with ideas for, so then the Justice League are going to murder someone in this scene, and there's Ben Affleck in the Batman costume just kind of doing this at him, you know, in the corner, and then just being like, you know, or we could cut that scene, you know, we can
well,
work
it's,
with you, Ben.
I think, okay, so I'm worried about Justice League, but I'm not worried necessarily about the DC movies as a whole. I'm very optimistic about, obviously, the Ben Affleck-directed Batman film that's going into
Batman versus Deathstroke. That'll be fun.
Yeah, no, that'll be really fun. With Joe McDonald, I can't say his last name. Mate. There's a guy named Joe playing Deathstroke. You've seen him in things.
See, now Trey knows what it's like for me when I'm afraid to pronounce things in front of him.
Theramacia. Anyways. But Ben Affleck is a very talented filmmaker, and actually I think that's the funniest things about the Batman versus Superman press junkets was Ben Affleck attempting to be enthusiastic about the film during press junkets. It's very well because he notoriously on set kept trying to make changes to what his character was doing or what he was saying, and Zack Snyder wouldn't listen to him. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe, you know, Ben Affleck, the guy with an Oscar for writing, might know something that, you know, Zack Snyder
well, I
might
hear he,
not.
His co-writer on Batman is some goofball named Jeff Johns, who, as far as DC books go, I can't think of anything good that guy ever did. Jeff Johns made me cry earlier this year with a book called Rebirth. It was good crying. And it was the saddest, most pathetic thing you've ever seen. Yeah.
Jeff Johns is insanely talented. What I love is the fact that all the directors of all these other DC films keep trying to say how unlike Batman versus Superman their films are going to be. And so that's why Suicide Squad was... You know, here's the thing. Is Suicide Squad I have lots of complaints about, but because it came out the same year as Batman versus Superman, I liked it. Because it was a better movie than Batman versus Superman.
I can't wait to see that shirtless doofus in the puffy coat fight Ben Affleck. That's going to be great. I really hate the Joker, okay?
It's okay, there's three of them now.
It's okay, Jared...
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Jeff Johns.
It's okay, Jared Leto apparently is really angry and feels that he was betrayed. But with his Joker hardly being in the movie,
he totally got tricked into being in a movie. I totally believe that.
The only thing I'm upset with the Jared Leto Joker is that nobody has delivered on what I thought was going to happen with all sorts of really terrible fan made videos to the 30 Seconds to Mars the Kill song. Like I thought, as soon as that got announced, I'm like, oh man, this
can
is going to be.
Can I just say that method acting is . You know, for all the effort, if you usually hear about method acting and you hear about things like when, you know, Johnny Depp starred in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, he lived in, you know, Hunter S. Thompson's basement for 2 months, and you hear all this stuff about method acting, about how hard people are working. You know, for all the stuff that Jared Leto, they talked about Jared Leto doing all this method stuff for the Joker, I really expected him to perform better. But also, he fundamentally misunderstood the Joker. He would, ship people dead pigs. It's funny!
What?
I'll say the best thing about Suicide Squad is hearing Will Smith talk about how much he hates Jared Leto. And then having Will Smith's publicist try to clean it up afterwards. Will Smith in interview said, I really don't like that guy. And then Will Smith's PR people had to go no, he just means that he's, you know, it's a challenge to work with. It's because of the character. And then Will Smith would go out and go at later and say no, I just really don't like that guy. And so it's,
I don't appreciate the box of feces he sent me with ha ha written on it. I don't.
Yeah, who would have thought that might make friends with your coworkers? Try it at home, folks. If you've got to work closely with people for at least a few months, see what happens if you ship them a box of your own poop. Just see. I'm betting you're not going to make a lifelong friend. I don't know. I think I'm going out on a limb there. So yeah, any other questions or input from? Okay, yes,
from
you in the back.
Apologetic Geek Out podcast.
Yeah. I just like to say I just got done doing my cursory interviews. I do interviews for at conventions, and we've been doing this for a year, right? Less than a year.
No, you see, when your partner says we've been doing this for a year, right, and it's less, what you do is you say just about. You see, play it up.
Play it up. I don't want to make him feel
No. This is you're appearing right now very quietly on someone else's show, so you want to seem big.
Yeah.
So try it again. We've been doing this for just a year. Your response is more or less. Try it again. All right, there you go.
This is the first convention I have not had anyone say a bad word about the convention staff.
Oh.
What if you don't train the staff, and can I steal them from you at some point?
Well, okay, so the secret to having a really well-trained staff is to go find a bunch of people who have been working conventions for 5 to 10 years and exclusively recruit them.
Yeah, Zach Neal, our volunteer coordinator this year.
Yeah, Zach Neal, he was actually a co-founder of DaishoCon. He's been working conventions for a very long time. He's our workforce organizer.
We founded DaishoCon in his dorm room.
Yeah.
True story.
So it's I think we have a couple of members of staff who are a little less experienced, but they've especially like our vendor coordinator Jane has been a really fast study and has been brilliant in her position.
She's magic.
Oh my God, how did we end up with her on staff? I'm not even sure, but we just have a lot of talented. What we did is we went out and tried to find the most talented people we could. And
then we kidnapped their families and, you know.
And we held them for ransom for 3 to 6 weeks.
Talked to them 2 days in it before the con.
And eventually, you know, if you held someone hostage long enough, there's this thing called Stockholm Syndrome.
Okay, let's not do that. This is getting into some dark territory that.
Oh, we're going Beauty and the Beast here?
We're not doing that.
Tale as old as time.
Thank you very much for your comment, though, guys. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, any other questions?
Yeah. Thank you, yeah.
It's okay if you don't. Don't feel bad.
Well, with that.
But Cheesy, what are your thoughts?
On
everything.
Name it, pal.
Okay. When was the last time you played a video game?
Oh, about 2 hours ago, I played some Mario Kart with one of our guests, Helena Steele. That was a lot of fun.
I play Pokemon Go constantly, and it counts, so shut up.
Last night,
I'm sorry. You shook your head. But, okay, I've been playing games for a long time, and there's more difficulty in playing Pokemon Go than there was in playing Tetris, and no one told me that playing Nintendo games was not real video games at the time. I'm Valor. We're all Valor up here.
We're entirely...
To be fair, they've gotten a lot of the bugs out.
Yeah, they're working on it.
My last video game was the one where I almost broke the video game room last night, because it is a well-established fact that my favorite video game character is Proto Man from the Mega Man series, and I have never played Mega Man 3, so I decided to ask if I could play Mega Man 3 for a little bit, and our gaming crew are great. And they had no idea where it was, so they had to look through 3 bins before they found it. And everyone in the gaming room at the time was treated to finding out just how much I hate Top Man. So I'd like to dedicate this podcast to Top Man. I hope you die, and I hope every stupid top-shooting robot in your stage dies too. Top Man!
But tell us how you really feel.
Oh, Needle Man sucks too.
Don't you hate it when people say that?
Bricks. It's not even made of needles. Advertise truthfully, Needle Man. I'm coming for you next.
Oh, come on. Okay.
So anything else before we?
Before we let Nick keep talking about Mega Man.
Well, thank you all for joining us for our live episode here at Nerd and Tie Expo. As always, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher and the Google Play Store. Feel free to rate, review us there. And feel free to sponsor us if you feel like it. Go to nerdandtie.com and click on the sponsorship forms. And feel free to write to us at nerdandtie.com. Click on the contact forms. Let us know your thoughts, feelings, emotions, dreams, hopes, cares, fears, all of that. Let us know everything.
Whether or not you're scared of garden gnomes. Because Lord knows I am.
And so with that, I'm Professor Firsters.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I'm Nick Izumi.
Don't keep on smiling.
keep on spocking in the free world.
Yeah, you gotta give the guy a second, Paul.
Come on, man.
There's a dramatic pause. There's always a dramatic pause.
Dance party.
We're gonna get to my favorite part where they say David to Gnome.
Aha, I tricked you. I'm not going to play that part.
No.
Fade out. Fade out.